To begin.
Are you watching closely?
To begin.
Clytus, I'm bored.
How to start?
What plaything can you offer me today?
Hello and welcome to the first syllable again. Where are we since we last were here? Oh, couple things. A title problem that wasn't a problem. And a death update because things are happening. First, the title problem. Oof. So, I've been talking about the Basara story that I'm planning to work on. To write original next. First, I'm going to work on a short story. Rewriting. And then I was going to work on Choose Two Rabbits. Which, if you listen to the show, you've heard a little bit about. Liever, Lee, the puppet rabbit detective guy. And I had ideas for a few short stories involving him, because he's an easy go-to character for something very simple. But Choose Two Rabbits is definitely more complicated, more like a novel. My first time writing a mystery? I've thought about a few before, but never got to them. I think I talked about one on this show before, actually. Interestingly, that one, which was called Herkimer Floyd P.I., which I'm sure I talked about it in the show. If not, quick recap. It was an idea I had years ago, and then I found the notes for it just a few years ago. I think 2020, actually. It was a pandemic thing. I was thinking of writing it when the pandemic had us in lockdown and stuck at home and teaching from home, which was great. Basically, Herkimer Floyd P.I. was about this guy who used to play a detective in the... Originally, I conceived it as being in the 70s, but then it was going to be updated so that he was playing a detective in like the 90s on TV. But he's like this character actor who's been around for decades. Herkimer Floyd is his birth name. His professional name was something else. Henry Floyd, I think. I don't have the notes in front of me. His wife is killed and he is accused of the murder and he has to kind of rely on things he remembers from playing a detective on TV in order to solve his own wife's murder. The problem is I didn't know how to write the mystery part. I think Lee's version is more about the characters and the larger world building and conspiracies and organized crime, less about the mystery. I think the mystery at the center of it is actually much simpler, but I haven't figured out all the details. I think I'm going to have to outline a little bit more. I did just a few days ago. Put all the notes for it onto my computer so I could sort them out into character details, plot details, well, Lee character details, other characters, and plot details. So I could start sorting through everything. The interesting thing there, the thing I was found funny when I realized it, is Herkimer Floyd P.I. reused a couple names, Roland and, oh, what's the wife's name? I forgot the wife's name. Roland St. Clair and... No. Roland and Claire St. James. That was it. Was that it? Or was it St. Clair? No, St. James. That they were in Herkimer's story, they were film producers. Husband and wife team. Director, producer, writer. They do everything. And they do stuff together. And they were... possibly involved with his wife's death. It was a whole thing. Now because I never wrote the Herkimer Floyd thing, I put their names in my Lee notes. Because the names, I don't know, they're interesting to me. So now, instead of being film producers, they are theater producers. Maybe expanding into film is brand new in Basara. They do have cameras, but they don't call them cameras. I know what they call them. I don't know how to introduce it because it's a weird term. I don't want them to just call it camera. But I know they take pictures. Pictures is an easy one to reuse. It's a basic word. I figure it's fine. For the actual, like, film presentation in a theater, I think I'm going to use, like, phantasmagoria, because that's a fitting term. It's an old term we used. But phantasm is just weird enough that it's the kind of thing fantasy things latch onto. So I think I could go with it. But they might be producing that and just getting into it. And they might be involved in the conspiracy, or they might be a red herring, or I don't know. But interestingly, I realized this when I brought up Herkimer Floyd today, in this, is that Roland and Claire St. James, I believe those names came from, originally, a script I wrote. in the mid-90s, I want to say, it was basically a Highlander episode, Highlander the TV show. The thing about Highlander is you weren't able to submit a script. Not that my script would have been good enough, they'd ever use it or anything anyway, but I couldn't even submit it. I would have in the 90s. In the 90s, I would have been like, fuck it, I'll submit. I'm not going to be all assuming it's bad. But you couldn't submit unless you had Canadian or French citizenship, specifically, because Highlander was produced half the season in Vancouver, half the season in Paris, every year. But I wrote a Highlander script. I also wrote a couple X-Files scripts at the time, because I was trying some things out. And I'm pretty sure Roland and Claire are characters from my Highlander script. I don't remember who they were in that, but I vaguely remember the name coming from there. Just like I know one of the characters in that was Charlotte Cuvier, a name I later used again in... I don't think that's in the Herkimer story. It wouldn't fit in Basara. Charlotte's a bit too... Earth. Maybe I can find a way to vary it. Roland is just interesting enough, you know. Child Roland is classic fantasy and the Dark Tower. So Roland works. Claire works. It's basic. It's simple. It's short. Whether or not saint is an appropriate word in Basara, it is the word I've been using for people who basically priests to any of the gods that then died in the process of being that. They become sainted or some version of that. I'm not explaining the process. I don't know they're sanctified or whatever they are there. Yeah. Where was I? Title. So, I've been talking about the story. Choose Two Rabbits. The thing is, the more I talked about it here, and the more I had notes on it on my phone in the notes app, I've forgotten what the title meant. Because I've been using like idioms and puns for Basara titles. What used to be called the Escalor, which was in a way, it's a pun anyway. But I wasn't sure if I liked it anymore. It might turn into a Basaric idiom. Out of the lion's den and into the fire. Four-finger discount, when I came up with that idea, was a fairly basic notion of a short story about a heist. And so the pawn being kind of this weird joke on a five-finger discount for theft, but four fingers because specifically the story hinges on the fact that Odds is missing a finger, and they have to go get her finger. I think I explained that in this show, so. That's the plot. But by the time I was even close to writing it, so much more had come into the different characters and the backstory and other stuff that could be part of the heist that it was not going to be a short story. And as it turned out, was not a short story. It's, what, 240 pages? Something like that? I forget. And now, while I kind of like the title, I don't know if the title fits. But I don't know what title to put on it anymore. But it's that pun, and I'm like, eh, I might keep it, I might try to come up with something else, but coming up with an idiom that fits the story of a runaway who needs to break into her family's house and steal stuff, I don't know what the idiom I need is. Finding idioms that mean things is hard. You can search idioms with specific references, like when I was looking up things for Lee, I put in rabbit idiom to see what comes up. And when I first realized a few days ago that something was wrong, I was looking it up again and Choose Two Rabbits wasn't coming up with anything at first. Instead, it was coming up with Chase Two Rabbits. So let me explain. A more recent search did find references to Choose Two Rabbits as kind of fitting the same idiom, but I think it might make more sense as Chase Two Rabbits. But it comes from, apparently... Let's see, I think oldest reference I found. Desiderius Erasmus, compiling a collection of Greek and Latin proverbs, a collection published around 1500, known as Adagia or Adages, contains the proverb, Duos isequens lepores neutrum capit. He that hunts two hares catches neither. The modern version is, if you chase two rabbits, you will lose them both. And there's variations of that depending on the country, but the phrasing's kind of the same in all of them. The choose two rabbits thing, similar. Those who choose two rabbits catch none. So it could go with choose two rabbits, but because it's a mystery, I think chase might sound better in the title, so I might change it. I think in my notes I have it currently changed to chase. But it's interesting. realize in choosing idioms as titles, I'd forgotten what one meant. Like, one of the short stories with Lee is called Her Heart in Her Throat, which, having a heart in your throat is a thing I've definitely heard someone say before, but no one I know. I don't use it. And as a title, I don't know how quickly people will know what it means. I don't know. I don't know how common it is. Another story I was going for, variant of a saying, where'd it go? A wolf in Nibinos clothing, which is essentially a wolf in sheep's clothing. They don't have sheep, they have Nibinos, which are more like sheepdogs than sheep. Kind of like a cross between a goat and a sheepdog. So that's another one with Lee, and then another one called A Hungry Man is an Angry Man, which specifically involves a restaurant, so I was looking up things about food. But I liked A Hungry Man is an Angry Man. Story ideas. Okay. Her Heart in Her Throat is about Lee and a young Duero girl who has been separated from her family and needs help getting home. And she thinks that essentially the boogeyman is coming to get her. That's it. It was going to start narratively as Lee telling the story until she sits down in his office and tells her version of the story, and then he goes with her, so he takes over the narration again. Very simple. I figure it'll be pretty short, straightforward. Not a lot of world building, not a lot of Lee's life stuff I have in my notes for Chase Two Rabbits. Wolf in Nibinos Clothing is sort of a Blade Runner riff. Lee is hired to hunt down a clockwork who has his control rod has malfunctioned and he got away from the family that owns him. And essentially the family has decided he's dangerous and Lee has to kill him. Simple. Basically a simple investigation. He figures out where he went, goes after him, and then similar to Her Heart in Her Throat, the clockwork would get a nice monologue of a sort before Lee either kills him or lets him go. That is Wolf in Nibinos Clothing. Hungry Man is an Angry Man. It's in my notes for Chase Two Rabbits that Lee goes to this restaurant. I don't remember what it's called offhand. But it's a restaurant he frequents often and he never has to pay. They always tell him your money's no good here because at some point in the past he did something for the woman who owns the restaurant. And she has been repaying him for years by giving him free food. Because he can eat. He doesn't need to, but he can. So he does. And Hungry Man is an Angry Man is essentially going to start with him at this restaurant. And I imagine each of these stories, we get a little idea if he's just come off of some other case as it starts. I know in Chase Two Rabbits, he has just come off locating and returning a kidnapped baby to its parents. And it was a very big story, made the news. It's in the front page of lots of papers. So Lee's kind of famous. And he's a novelty because he's a one-of-a-kind individual, so weird position for him to be in as that story begins. But each one might start with him being on the verge of some other story. So at the verge of some case he has just solved, he is at the restaurant eating. And I know the son of the woman who owns the restaurant jokes with him about, you know, as soon as he takes over, Lee will have to start paying for his meals again. And then something happens to the owner. Probably she's killed, because that's the simple way to go with it. And the Hungry Man is an Angry Man. Lee, more than any other time, is very into this case, immediately wants to solve it, wants to fix it, wants to get revenge on whoever killed her. And we'll get a flashback to whatever the case was that he did for her, so this might be a longer story. Might not be a short story. I don't know, till I plan more for it. But it's about Lee getting kind of violent, going after these people, whoever it was. And I know the end of the story is that he's back at the restaurant, and he's thinking maybe this time he'll pay for his food. And the son tells him, no, your money's no good here. That's the weird thing, is that the story kind of came to me with a beginning and an end, and a lack of a middle. But I love the beginning and end so much that I kind of want to write it sometime. Problem is, this is the way my brain works. Too many ideas at too many times. Always so many things. That's just the Lee stories. You get back to the odds and kill stuff. And we go from First Finger Discount to Fish Out of Water, which plays with narrative structure because we have three narrators, Kasaya, Saraya, and Amara. Kasaya is Odd's little brother. He's telling the story about what's going on around their new home and trying to figure out what's going on in her life. Saraya is one of the people who ended up coming along with them to Malastra when they fled the city at the end of the first book, and she and Kill are opening a restaurant in this town. Like, we've jumped ahead a few months, and they're trying to figure out how to make a living. Because they have been working. Kill and Odds have been working on the local railroad. Because Kill's a good muscle, good enforcer. Odds is good at knowing when bad things are about to happen. So they're good at their jobs, but Kill's not into it. He wants to cook. He wants to read. So Soraya tells that part of the story. Kasaya is, in his part of the story, is also learning how to really focus on being a skinwalker. He's learning from Inogen, who fled the city with them, who's teaching him how to turn into different animals. And I imagine that playing like a more serious version of the Sword in the Stone movie, with Arthur turning into different animals and learning lessons, stuff like that. Meanwhile, on the railroad, something bigger is going on near the town, and this girl, Emira, kind of has a thing for Odds, and one of the things in my notes is that everyone always kind of likes Odds. And at some point in the story, Odds will realize she's making them like her. She kind of presents what they want without meaning to. Even though she escaped the life she had before, she doesn't know how to live the life she wants. So she sort of subconsciously uses magic to make people like her. Not that they wouldn't really like her, but it's more impulsive. And so Emira is telling that part of the story, so that Odds is not the focus as much. She is, but she isn't. Kill is, but isn't. Kasaya is, but isn't. Although Kasaya does get to tell his own part of the story. Because that part of the story might be more about Inogen and her past and her problems. That's fish out of water. After that, probably immediately after that, not in terms of writing, but in terms of setting, is Sobra as a judge. At some point, I know there's another story that comes after this because we have to get to Kill's backstory. Kill, when I originally conceived him as a D&D character, has a very specific origin. We know some of it from Four-Finger Discount, but there's a specific set of details that will not be revealed until he finds it out. And that's a big deal. It has to tie into a big story. Sober as a Judge might introduce it, or introduce the plot points that lead up to it, or Fish Out of Water could, or it'd be in a fourth story, I don't know. Sober as a Judge, I know the narrative is much different. It's being told sort of in the future by, I'm not looking at my notes right now, so I'm forgetting the details, but essentially, at some point in the past, Odds embraced her ability to just read minds and control people and predict when people would do bad things. And it's something set up in Four Finger Discount that she is afraid of being, is this version of herself she calls the judge. And Sober as a Judge essentially is being narrated by someone in the sort of future where she became the judge and sort of changed the world. Not necessarily for the better. And this person is trying to find a way to communicate with her, with Odds, in the past, to try to tell her this. To help her not make the world go this way. The problem is, back in the present, Odds needs to do this. It's a little bit like Paul Atreides in Dune, which right now, you know, thing a lot of people are talking about, because Dune Part 2 is out in theaters. He sees this bad version of the world that he has to create in order to make a better version. And so even though he has to do horrible things, he does it. But Odds doesn't want to do horrible things, and so she has to figure out how do I not be the judge, but also change the world. Because there's some other bad things going on in the world that have already been set up by little details in Four Finger Discount, in Fish Out of Water, in Chase Two Rabbits. And if I get to it, as either a D&D campaign, which is why the world building reemerged last couple years, in Daggers of Crosswater, which is a separate story with a different set of characters. That might be a D&D campaign, in which case it would definitely have to be streamed in some way. But I don't even know if I can do that. Or I gotta write it as its own novel, because Daggers of Crosswater sets up much more of the ongoing plot involving the overbearing king, Absalom the Forgiving. Who may be a bad person. Well, he's definitely a bad person in several ways, but he might be bad for the world. He might be the thing that Odds has to become the judge to stop. Or not. The fun thing is, with these ideas so far in the future still, for me, is that they can change a lot. Choose Two Rabbits can change titles. Four Finger Discount can still change titles, because it's not getting published anytime soon. I do actually want to submit it to places. I haven't submitted writing to be published in a long while, but I'd like to try again. I haven't reread it. I was waiting till Sarah reads it. She's read part of it, but then had to get new glasses because her old ones were giving her a headache, and so she hasn't gotten to the rest yet. Because we're busy. She's busier than me. I would love it if I could do this for, like, a living. It's what I wanted to do years ago. I wanted to write. It took a while, but I got frustrated. Sending short stories to magazines to be published. Sending a few manuscript things to places. I don't think I was that great a writer yet. I had great ideas, but not the best writing. I think the writing is much better now. I think it became a lot better several years ago. And I was glad that it came back when I was writing Four Finger Discount. And writing Death, Death, Death. There's a segue. Because Death, Death, Death is currently, as of today, at 99 pages. The seven characters who are still alive are in the basement, which is locked, and for a reason not explained yet, Benny cannot get into the basement. He can't just break the door down. I can spoil it here. They won't hear me. He can't damage the house. It's part of the... They might not even know that exactly, but I know that. He can't damage the house. They might not be able to damage the house. The house just is the house. It's part of what ties him to the location, why he keeps coming back every 7 years. But right now, the seven characters who are still alive are all in one room. The audience is probably confused, but Kitty is about to explain the twist. Well, the first big twist. But I wrote 10 pages-ish yesterday, almost the same today, although part of today was going back and fixing some things earlier in the script, because I realized AJ should have a camera out a few times and be filming some stuff, because that's just like their thing. And I needed to establish where the guns were. There's a gun cabinet in the game room, and I forgot to mention it when Susie and Ed were in the game room. So I want to establish that's there, so it's not as out of nowhere later. I had to change some minor details. Like, I realized when I was reading a thing about the real person that he's named after, that Ringo's watch is not a pocket watch, it's a wristwatch. Things like that. Fixing some stuff. Figuring out where all the characters were that were left alive. Getting them all into one place. It's actually hard to get the one group into that same place because none of them were nearby when Kitty told people to get in the basement. We had to figure out a way to push them into it. And I managed. And the audience is confused because they just saw three Bennies at the same time. Well, maybe not at the same time, but in a row. Three different spots. One was on the deck, one was in the living room, and the other was also in the living room, but different position. And now the characters get to figure out what's happening. So, there's that. Death, Death, Death is on... is becoming a thing. And once it's done, I hope to finish it soon. I'm going to try to write a lot of it this week because it's spring break for me. Today is March 25th. This episode comes out Friday. Next week, back to my regular schedule, and then the week after, I add a new class that is 4 days a week in the morning for like an hour. It's close to home, so the drive won't be bad, but it's four mornings a week, which is going to mess with my sleep. It's going to mess with my schedule for recording things, for editing things, for writing. So I want to try to get the writing done, and then once I'm into my new schedule, figure out what I'm writing next, and that's probably the rewriting of the Escalor. And then depending on how long that takes, maybe rewrite another thing, because that might be easier to do in small spurts if I don't have as much time. You'll hear about it if you're listening. Anyway, that's enough rambling about that. I gotta go read about sex and violence in the movies. Tune into the Groundhog Day Project minute by minute, and you'll know what that means.
Cut. You're still here? It's over.
Stuff that dreams are made of.
It's a passport.
Go home.
To another world.
Go.